Vancouver, we present Episode 4 of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The Kraken Wakes, Episode 4. Threat to our civilization from the mysterious invaders occupying the Earth's oceans continues to grow. Shipping the world over is at a virtual standstill, and the cost of living keeps soaring. Then comes the report of a strange incident on a remote Indonesian island. Terrified survivors claim that during the night, several villages have been raided by whales and giant jellyfish that came ashore and dragged people back into the sea. The only evidence is several deep furrows on the beach and a coat of stinking slime sprayed on houses and trees. Now the world waits and wonders. Where and when will the next attacks come? How many people will lose their lives? Mike and Phyllis Watson are covering the story for the English Broadcasting Company.
Got a job for you two. Something exciting.
What's the pitch, Freddy?
One of EBC's favorite sponsors proposes to send off an expedition to obtain definite evidence of the nature of the deep sea menace.
Expedition? Where to?
Well, that was our first question, Phyllis. But he doesn't know. The whole decision on location is in Dr. Barker's hands.
Barker?
His stock has recovered quite a bit because his pronouncements have had a higher score than anyone else's. So the sponsor went to Barker and said, look here. These things came up on April Island, Sapphira, and a few other out-of-the-way places. Where do you think they're most likely to appear next? Walker wouldn't tell him, of course. But they talked, and the upshot was that the sponsor will subsidize an expedition led by Barker to a region to be selected by Barker. What's more, Barker also selects the personnel, and he specifically asked EBC to approve you two.
He was always my favorite ographer. Well, when do we start?
You'll travel by air, for safety's sake. Now go and talk it over with Dr. Barker, and then come back here and we'll go into contracts and all of it.
You know, I can't help feeling guilty. For 5 weeks, we've done nothing but laze around the Grand Hotel and wait for something to happen.
Well, probably nothing much has happened on the island of Escondida since the last pirate ship disappeared from the Spanish Main. Oh,
speaking of pirates, I discovered that the capital is called Smithtown after some fellow who'd been a pirate.
Good heavens, I've never heard of a pirate named Smith.
But I haven't figured out why Barker selected Escondida.
Well, be thankful he did, Mike. We might be languishing on Grand Cayman or Little Cayman.
There's one thing. If an attack does come here, we have enough floodlights rigged up to let us see and film everything.
Hello, you two.
Oh, hello, Muriel. You've been swimming again?
We kept to the very shallow places.
Oh. Would you care for a drink?
I suppose there's time for a quick one before
what?
Dinner.
No, don't get up, Mike. I'll get it.
Oh, G&T for me, Leslie.
Yeah. I suppose you've heard the news about Gallows Island in the Bahamas?
No, we were having a siesta.
Port Ann, the chief town on Gallows, was raided last night.
And nearly half the population disappeared.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Leslie. More than 1,000 people in all.
I'll bet Barker's gnashing his teeth.
No, he's very excited at the reports from survivors. At last, it seems we've something definite to go on.
Well?
Yes, there were plenty of people who agreed that well, they'd seen things like tanks.
What sort of tanks?
Like military tanks, but larger, that came sliding up the beaches. The reports are very confused after that. Panic, I suppose.
Has the news reached Smithtown?
It certainly has. People are organizing armed patrols.
Things are looking up. Well, I think I should have another tall, cool one before dinner.
Mike's thirst for excitement is equaled only by his unquenchable thirst.
Phil, it's time you stopped staring at the moon and came to bed.
No soul, that's the trouble. I often wonder why I manage you.
Darling, it's nearly 1 o'clock. What the devil is there to look at besides the empty town square?
Listen. Do you think... Mike! Mike, they must be coming.
What?
Look, the floodlights are going on.
Oh, I I can only see a few people running across the square towards the harbor.
Well, the houses cut off our view beyond the square.
I better get down there. I must see what's going on. But, Phil, that's what we came here for.
I don't care. We wait a bit.
Please give me that door key.
Don't be a fool, Mike.
Stop. Now, why did you have to throw the key out of the window?
Oh, don't you see? The only reports we've had at all were from the people who hid or ran away.
That's all very well, but...
Look, look, there's Leslie running back. What is it, Les?
God knows. I can't get through the crowd. If they see it's coming this way, whatever it is, I'll film it from my window.
People are all running now.
Bocca's down on the patio with the pilot.
Everybody stay inside the hotel. Keep all the floodlights on, Leslie, but keep under cover.
What's that noise?
That's the sea tanks heading this way.
My God, look.
Huh?
There's one of the tanks.
I better get some commentary on tape. This is Michael Watson for EBC. From a second floor window of the Grand Hotel on the island of Escondida in the Caribbean, we've just had our first sight of a sea tank. A curve of dull gray metal has come sliding into the town square, carrying away the lower corner of a house front. Men with rifles are shooting at the lumbering sea tank, but the bullets appear to have no effect. Slowly, heavily it comes on, grinding and scraping across the cobblestones of the floodlit square for which people have fled in terror. The shooting's wild now. I estimate the sea tank's speed at under 3 miles an hour. Imagine an elongated egg about 35 feet long, which has been halved down its length and set flat side to the ground. There may be rollers beneath, but it seems and sounds simply to grate forward on its metal belly with plenty of noise, but none of machinery. Another sea tank is now getting sight. Yes? Yes, it's heading in our direction. And now another. The third sea tank has stopped in the middle of the town square. The crowd is running away now.
Mike, the nearest tank is bumping.
So it is. All the sea tanks have stopped. And now, the nearest tank is bulging. What I mean is, on its smooth top, a small dome-like swelling has appeared. It's lighter color than the metal beneath. A kind of off-white, semi-opaque substance that glistens under the floodlights. And it appears to be growing in size. Yes. It's growing rapidly, in fact.
They're all doing it now.
The bulges have appeared on all three tanks. They're no longer dome-shaped, but spherical, attached to the metal by a neck. Inflating like balloons, they sway slightly as they swell bigger and bigger.
They're going to explode!
Each tank now has more than one swelling. The largest is at least 5 feet in diameter. They look like repulsive bladders. Something's happening in the nearest tank. The largest balloon has just become detached. Yes, it's wobbling into the air like a huge soap bubble. It's up 10 feet or so now. It's just hovering there. No, there it goes. It's not an explosion, really. There's no sound at all. It's just like a split open. And now, a great number of long tendrils like giant white whiplashes shooting out in all directions.
Oh,
look out, Phil!
Oh. Help me! My arm is...
Stop
me by the arm!
Hold tight.
My arm!
Damn thing won't let go!
Oh, it's pulling me out of the window!
There. It's let go.
Oh, my arm! It's torn the skin right off!
But you're all right. You're all right.
What's happening out there now?
All the tentacles are drawing back into the balloon. Oh, God! It's got Muriel! Oh. And Leslie, too. People are being caught like flies in flypaper.
What's that noise?
It's Johnny shooting up the sea tanks. One of them blew up. Lie still, darling. I'll get a doctor as soon as I can.
The door's locked and I threw away the key.
I'll break it open with a chair.
Out about it last night was hell on earth. Oh, how is your arm, Phyllis?
Oh, it's throbbing, but I can manage.
You know, you ought to stay in bed.
She refuses to miss a trick. Phew, the smell of that slime and everything is overpowering.
Yes, indeed. Oh, Alfred, Bill, Muriel, Leslie, all gone. And I brought you all here. I've shown very little consideration for your safety, I'm afraid.
Oh, you mustn't feel personally responsible, Dr. Bocca. None of us had to come, you know.
Yes, we have some results, at any rate. Thanks to Ted's camera work, the people at home will now be able to see what we're up against. And thanks to him, too, we have the first specimen.
Specimen? What of?
Oh, a piece of one of those long tentacle things. One of them whipped through the window, and Ted cut off about 8 inches of it. It just dropped to the floor, wriggled a couple of times, and then curled up. We shipped it off in the planes with the films.
Well, just what are they?
There's something very peculiar about them. The fundamental is obvious enough. It goes back to some type of sea anemone, but whether the things have been bred or whether they have in some way been built up on the basic pattern, who knows? I find several points extremely disturbing. Their behavior implies specialized purpose. The things are used, you see, but not like weapons in the ordinary sense. Not just to destroy, that is. They're more like snares.
You mean the purpose is to catch and collect people like... Well, as if they were sort of shrimping for us.
Yes, something of the kind.
They seem to be invulnerable to rifle fire.
Yes, but explosive cannon shell can fracture the metal casing. The manner in which it then disintegrates suggests that it's already under very strong stress and not very far from breaking point.
Any idea what might be inside the sea tanks?
Well, the contents seem to have been simply gelatinous masses confined under immense pressure. Yet there must be a mechanism of some kind to propel these immensely heavy hulls.
Heavy is right, Doctor. I examined their trails this morning. Some of the cobblestones have been ground down and some cracked into flakes.
Do you think they're a real threat to our species, I mean?
I don't know. There have been lords of the earth before us. Some of them in a sounder position, too. There was a great variety of dinosaur types which should have given them a broad chance of survival. All the human eggs, on the other hand, are pretty nearly in one basket. Unless we can discover precisely what is involved in this assault.
Admiral Porter, Mr. and Mrs. Watson are here for the interview.
Ah, yes, Winters. Bring them in. Good of you to make yourselves available.
We're happy to cooperate, Admiral.
Please sit down.
Admiral, I take it you've read Dr. Barker's latest report.
Yes, I have, Winters. It raises a large number of controversial points.
In what respect, sir?
Well, Dr. Barker shows, if I may say so without offense, a generosity of hypothesis which appears to exceed the warrants of the observed facts to a degree quite remarkable in a reputable scientist.
Some of the newspapers have had quite a go at Barker, calling him hysterical and so on.
Precisely, Winters. That's why I thought that a chat with the others who were present at the Escondida incident might help to put things in perspective for us. Now, Dr. Barker says here in his report that these sea tank things and the exuded pseudo-sealant errata are unaffected by rifle fire, but that the sea tanks completely disintegrated when hit by explosive cannon shells. You support that?
Yes, sir. They explode as thoroughly as a broken light bulb implodes.
Leaving no identifiable fragments?
Just a lot of metal splinters and pieces which might have been anything.
Except the slime?
Oh, yes, except that, of course. By afternoon, the sun had baked that dry, and it was like a hard varnish over everything.
Now, these tentacle things. Would you say that both these forms showed any degree of intelligence?
It's a very difficult one, sir. They responded to certain external stimuli and very strongly. There was intelligent direction of both forms, undoubtedly.
Dr. Barker's theory is that these forms were, in fact, agents only. That is, that the controlling mind was elsewhere and directed them by some means of communication at present unknown to us. What's your opinion on that?
I think the theory is tenable, sir. My wife compared the whole operation to something like shrimping.
An indiscriminate instrument rather than a precise one?
Yes, Admiral. It discriminates no further than to select the animate from the inanimate.
If I understand Dr. Barker rightly, he suggests that the sea lanterets are probably not, in the accepted sense, living creatures at all. It appears to be his opinion that they may well be artificial organic constructions built for a specialized purpose. Let me see now. How does he put it? Ah, yes. It is far from inconceivable that organic tissues might be constructed in a manner analogous to that used by chemists to produce plastics of a required molecular structure. If this were done, and the resulting artifact rendered sensitive to stimuli administered chemically or physically, it could, temporarily at least, produce a behavior which would, to an unprepared observer, be scarcely distinguishable from that of a living organism. How does that strike you, Captain Winters?
Well, there is a certain logic in it, sir. As Barker suggests, the cylindrical form could have been selected for its simplicity of construction. Likewise, the sea tanks.
In other words, then, we are being attacked by organic mechanisms under remote or predetermined control.
Well, possibly less startling than it appears, Admiral. But when it's considered in the light of the control which we ourselves are able to exercise over inorganic materials, remotely, as with guided missiles, or predeterminately, as with torpedoes.
Good analogy, Winters. All the same, unsupported speculation of this kind will undoubtedly be played up by the newspapers.
It's nice to see you back again down this way, Mr. Watson. What it'll be tonight?
A pint of your excellent cider, Mr. Martin.
Well, there's still plenty of that, sir. Now, if it was whiskey you'd asked for, there'd be a different story.
Feeling the pinch, are you?
Everyone's feeling it. The bloody cost of living's up 200%. God knows when it'll stop. Harbors have choked the ships because the crews refuse to work them. Or the owner won't pay the insurance rates. Not that I blame him, mind you. But it's put in thousands and thousands out of work.
But the situation shouldn't get out of hand with the national airlift working. Two large air freighters working on a rapid shuttle service can bring in nearly as much as the average cargo boat could carry the same length of time.
But think of the cost, Mr. Watson. Meanwhile, those bloody sea tank things are having themselves a field day. At least a dozen places raided in the Caribbean in the past 2 weeks. There's a whole series of bloody attacks on the coast of Japan and elsewhere.
Well, at least we're not likely to be attacked. The British Isles sit relatively high on the continental shelf. And at our backs, we have the shallow North Sea. It's places near the really deep water that have to worry about raids.
Just as well, too. Otherwise, there'd be panics here, just like in the West Indies. This morning's paper reckons there must be thousands of these bloody sea tanks at work. And it's my opinion, sir, that the newspapers are only allowed to print part of the story. If all the facts were to be made public, it'd be such an outcry.
They must provide defenses, Phil, or else give the people the means to defend themselves.
Well, that would mean letting people have arms. Isn't it almost a principle that a people should not be allowed to defend itself, but should be forced to defend its government?
What's wrong, darling?
Nothing, except that at times I get sick of putting up with all the shams and humbugs and pretending that the lies aren't lies and the propaganda isn't propaganda. Oh, I'll get over it, but... Well, I think they're going to let thousands of people be killed by these horrible things rather than risk giving them powerful enough weapons to defend themselves.
Oh, darling,
I know what you're going to say, Mike, but I am scared. Nobody's really doing anything. They call conferences by the score and talk and talk and talk as if... Well, it'll all come right in the end if only they can keep on talking long enough.
But they are trying, you know.
Are they? I could... Oh. I'm sorry, Mike. I shouldn't have gone off the handle like that. I must be tired or something.
I know. It's been quite a strain. But there's nothing to be frightened about.
You're not frightened?
Oh, not really. Come on, let's walk down to the pub and have a nice bite to eat.
How does Mr. Martin manage to serve such good cheese nowadays?
Black market, I expect. I'll be very sorry if he ever runs out of this cider.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Watson. I haven't seen you here for a spell.
I've been rather busy, Mr. Martin.
Nasty business had attack at Santander on the North Spanish coast last night.
Yes.
Castle, you reckon it's up to 3,200 now. And you know what? Our esteemed Prime Minister has the nerve to say that the government is actively watching the situation.
He keeps saying no cause for alarm.
There's thousands of these sea tanks are crawling all over the sea bottom. But it'll go on being no bloody cause for alarm until several hundred poor Englishmen somewhere has got their bloody selves lassoed by flying jellyfish. Then it'll be all emergency order, some bloody panic. You watch.
Now, the whole thing boils down to the fact that we still know too little about... Hello?
Hello, Mike?
What's the idea, Freddy? It's the middle of the night.
Grab your hat and recorder, Mike. There's a car on the way for you now. There'll be a plane waiting at Northolt.
What's it all about?
You mean you've not heard?
Heard what?
Sea tanks. Place in Ireland called Muncara, Donegal.
Ireland attacked?
You want an on-the-scene documentary piece, so pop over there like a good fellow and get down your impressions.
Were there many casualties?
Half the village population, unfortunately. Over 200. There were 6 sea tanks. Prompt telephone call brought on 2 jet fighters. They wiped out 3 tanks and the rest went sliding back into the water. Now they're expecting more raids in places like Galway Bay, so be on your toes.
Okay, Freddy, I'll do my best. Once I get there, I'll telephone you.
And according to the official report, it's the Irish who've taken almost the whole weight of the North European attack. So far, Scotland has suffered only a few minor sea tank visitations in the Outer Isles, with scarcely a casualty. England's only raids to date occurred in Cornwall, and they, too, were small affairs for the most part. In America, serious trouble has been confined to the Gulf of Mexico. In general, it's the West Indies, the East Indies, the Philippines and Japan that continue to suffer most. But they, too, have been learning ways of inflicting enormous damage on the sea tanks for very small returns. And now, we turn the discussion over to our distinguished panel of experts with Fred Whittier, Director of Talks and Special Features, acting as host and moderator. Mr. Whittier.
Good evening, and welcome to Round Table, an informal discussion of newsworthy topics. In the studio tonight, we have the eminent geographer, Dr. Alistair Bocker, John Mallaby, editor-at-large of The Tidings, Captain Robert Winters, Royal Navy, and Michael Watson, well-known writer and broadcaster who has covered many assignments for EBC in connection with the Battle of the Deeps. First, a few words from Mike Watson, who recently returned from a tour of Ireland.
I'm glad to be able to say that the Irish are holding their own very nicely. After the first attack in Donegal, the government obtained large numbers of mines, bazookas, and mortars. Then, all along the west and south coast, squads of men quickly laid minefields above the tide lines where there were no protecting cliffs. In coastal towns, pickets armed with bomb-firing weapons keep all-night watch. That's where planes, jeeps, and armored cars wait on call.
Very encouraging, Mike. But their countermeasures have not deterred the sea tanks.
It's true, Fred, but they've certainly cost them their most potent weapon, surprise. And their losses very often are 100%.
Now, I believe Dr. Bocker has a comment.
Yes. I've had little success trying to persuade various authorities to include special traps among their defenses.
Captain Winters, any comment on that aspect?
Well, a few traps of the pitfall type were dug, but none ever made a catch. Another factor is that scarcely any place is willing to contemplate the prospect of a sea tank trapped on its foreshore, but still capable of throwing out tentacles for an unknown length of time. In any case, any attempt at broaching stalled or disabled sea tanks invariably caused them to explode in geysers of slush. Very often they do so before the attempt is made.
That's the effect of exposure to bright sunlight. The point I wish to make is that without actual specimens for close examination...
All the same, Dr. Bocker, those things down there have been taking a terrific beating, wouldn't you agree?
A beating, Captain? We ourselves have a tradition of taking beatings and then winning wars. Just look at what we have had to endure. We've lost the freedom of the seas... We've been forced to depend on air transport for the very food by which we live.
How much longer are the raids likely to continue?
If we knew the precise reason for the raids, it might be easier to make some kind of a prediction. In any case, their instigators are now better informed about us and therefore potentially more dangerous.
Why do you say more dangerous?
Because if defeated, they are not likely to try again in the same way with the same weapons. It boils down to this. Two intelligent forms of life are finding one another's existence intolerable. I've now come to believe that no attempt at a rapprochement could possibly have succeeded. Life in all its forms is strife. The better match the opponents, the harder the struggle. The most powerful of all weapons is intelligence. Any intelligent form dominates by and therefore survives
by its intelligence. A rival form of intelligence must, by its very existence, threaten to dominate, and therefore threaten extinction. Any intelligent form is its own absolute, and there cannot be two absolutes.
What do you propose we do?
We must attack. Attack as swiftly as we can find the means and with the intention of complete extermination. For the moment, we're pushing these things back, but they will return. For the same urge drives them as drives us. The necessity to exterminate or be exterminated. And when they come again, they will come better equipped.
Are you serious about their trying new and perhaps deadlier weapons?
Consider their alternatives, Mike. If they decide to give up on the sea tank assault, either they sit down there in the deeps, waiting for us to find a means to destroy them, or they come after us. I predict that unless we find a means to exterminate them very soon, they will be launching an entirely new kind of assault on us. From what I've seen of their capabilities, we could easily be the losers. By we, I mean mankind. Every human being on this earth.
From Vancouver, you have heard episode 4 of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The following actors were featured in this episode: Sam Payne, Shirley Broderick, Michael Irwin, Daphne Goldrick, Terrence Kelly, Roy Brinson, Derek Ralston, John White, Alan Roughton, and Greg Barnes. Sound effects, Lars Eastholm. The play was directed in the Vancouver studios of the CBC by Norman Newton, with technical operation by Jerry Stanley.